podcast.
You're listening to Sheldon Kennedy.
Hi, I'm Sheldon Kennedy, and I'd like to welcome you to our very first podcast, The Sheldon Kennedy Show. Haha. These episodes will feature honest and open conversations with notable guests who will share their stories, subject matter expertise, and insights on the many social issues we face today. This podcast is presented by Respect Group. Founded in 2004, Respect Group empowers people to recognize and prevent bullying, abuse, harassment, and discrimination through interactive online education. To date, over 1.6 million Canadians have been Respect certified in sport, schools, and the workplace. Thank you, Respect Group, for hosting us. My first guest today is a friend and a colleague and a partner. And I've jotted a few notes down just to introduce him. So I'm delighted to introduce our very first guest, Dr. Marco DeBuono. Marco is the Associate Vice President of Programs and Operations at Canadian Tire Jumpstart Charities, where he oversees programs to help Canadian children of all abilities participate in sport and recreation. Dr. DeBuono holds a PhD in nutritional sciences from the University of Toronto and has a history of advocating for the health and well-being of children and youth. In addition to being a grassroots sports advocate and a busy sports dad, I know that one, Marco sits on the Canadian Paralympic Committee's Diversity and Inclusion Committee. So with that, Dr. DeBuono, let's get started.
Awesome.
Yes. What a first guest. Hey, I was so excited to have you accept the invitation, Marco, to join us. I mean, when we look at what's going on in our world today and the launch of the Sheldon Kennedy Show and all of the stuff that Jumpstart has given and that is, you know, helping in this space before the pandemic, but even more so during the pandemic. It's an honor to have you join us, Marco. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheldon. It's such an honor and a privilege. I jumped at the chance when you all reached out and offered the opportunity to be your first guest. It's such a privilege to be here. Excited to talk. The only comment I have is you forgot to mention in the bio, I'm also Respect certified. Come on.
Oh, frick. I forgot about it. Marco is Respect certified, everybody. About five times over, maybe, Marco?
Probably, at least.
So I should expect a very respectful podcast conversation with you then.
Nothing less, never.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, I think the last time I saw you, it was the Battle of the Blades. And you were in your Charlie Chaplin outfit, you and Scott and Wayne and everybody else.
Yeah, the outfit I was coerced into wearing. But yes, it's been a long time. It's been way too long since I've seen any of the amazing partners that we've got all over the country.
Well, it was I was chatting with a friend of mine and in Toronto, and he was usually on a plane, as you and I would be, you know, 3-4 times a week, and he said he hasn't flown, you know, since last March. So anyway, it'll be good to see you again face-to-face, Marco. But that Battle of the Blades was fun. That was what a journey and what an opportunity to create a partnership for Jumpstart Charities. Caitlin and I were, it was just a great experience for us. And we had such good support from your whole team. And I just wanted to thank you again, and to be able to make that donation was, you know, just such a thrill for us.
Awesome. You know, Sheldon, we are so grateful for that. But, you know, it was so much fun to watch you on that journey, because it was the exact arc that we see kids and people, you know, all backgrounds, all ilks, the same arc that they follow when they embrace, you know, a new activity or a new, you know, pastime. You went from, I remember you telling us a story about Ron McLean reaching out to you, and you were a little apprehensive and you came into it and you went full Sheldon on this thing. And by the time it was done, like there was no doubt in anyone's mind, whether they were watching, you know, in their living room or whether they had the pleasure of being at the rink to watch you skate, there was no doubt that you and Caitlin were the couple to beat. And it was so much fun because you were just out there having a good time. And isn't that what this is all supposed to be about, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think you're absolutely right, Marco. That's what we tried to portray and come at it that way and tell that story and that journey. But it was a gift because, you know, I never thought I'd have that opportunity to just go out and enjoy sports the way I did as a kid. And, you know, probably not only myself, but many individuals out there, they've had the love of the game taken from them somehow, however that might be. And I'll tell you, when you can participate in any activity with the joy and the love that you entered it with, I think is a gift. So it's Marco, I wanted to just get to know you a little bit, you know, on a personal level, and let our guests know you a little bit. And I just wanted to know if you've ever completed anything on your bucket list.
Have I ever completed? Wow. Let's get right into it.
Hey.
Wow. You know, it's funny. I think my bucket list is always, you know, it's changed as I've gone through life and, you know, gotten older, became a dad to teenagers, went through lockdown. I've never had this, obviously there are a couple things I've always wanted to do. You know, like everyone else, travel certain places in the world, and I'm sure that will come. But, you know, every time I've entered a different stage of my life, whether it's been a career opportunity or whether it's been an opportunity to move to a new place or definitely when I became a dad, that was like for sure the quintessential moment where, you know, all my goals and dreams and aspirations changed. You know, I guess I've kind of just gone with the flow. You know, one of the things that people may not know about me unless they know me really well is that our family stumbled upon becoming a Disney family. Like when we had our firstborn, when Haley was born in 2003, about a year after she came to us, my wife and I were looking for a little bit of a break one spring after a long winter. This poor little toddler, you know, hobbling around in this winter coat and all these boots, barely able to walk in the snow. So we jetted off to Disney World for a weekend, and we kept going back every single year up until last February. So just before the lockdown hit. That's not something I ever thought I would do as a young adult. It's not something I thought I was going to do even when I was a young father, but it's become such an important part of our family. The kids have embraced every memory, every moment. And it's something we look back on now as a special part of who we are as a family. You know, you won't find any Disney memorabilia in our house, but it's certainly a trip we'd always look forward to taking. And we're kind of now realizing that's behind us as Haley is going off to university in the fall, and we'll have to explore something else to make memories as a family now.
Yeah. Well, that was our last trip, Disneyland. That's where we were when the pandemic hit. We had our little guy, like, you know, we have a young son and I have never walked up and down Main Streets so much, you know, Main Street, Disneyland Main Street there, you know, I'd go get a coffee and me and the little guy, we, you know, he's like 2.5 now. So he was, you know, almost, I guess, 2, when we were down there and you know, he just loved it, and it's built for kids and that was our last trip. So we speak about Disneyland often, Marco. I get it.
Nice. I get it. We do too.
Yeah, it's awesome. So what How did you, Marco, Dr. DeBuono, what made you go down the path that you went down to? What made you, get into the nutrition side of stuff and wellness and now running, being Jumpstart Charities to give to the country and in this space? What drove you to that, Marco?
Yeah, it's a question that I get asked a lot when I'm invited to speak to young university or college students who are on the transition, that were on the cusp of making their transition into the professional world. And now with years of work behind me, I can see it with a bit more clarity. But when I was an undergrad, like a lot of other people in my shoes in the sciences, I had these big dreams of becoming a doctor and specifically a pediatrician. And I think it's because I spent so much time, much to my parents, chagrin, in doctor's offices for ear infections and broken arms and broken bones of all sorts. So, coming into university, did my undergrad in biochemistry, really enjoyed all of that, metabolism piece of it, like tracing where different components go. And I came just shy of making it into medical school. But, now I look back on it, as devastating as that was at the time, that was one door closing and lots more opening. My passion for kids' health and well-being never waned. And just as I was, contemplating what do I do next, I realized, okay, let's follow this path of, the biochemistry and the metabolism and nutrition was something that was intriguing to me. And I followed that interest in part because it was around that time in the late 1990s where the national conversation around it was an international conversation, quite frankly, around childhood obesity being a major public health crisis was really ramping up in volume. And there was a lot of finger pointing from one sector to another and a lot of really heated debate. And I jumped right into it, got my nutrition degree, moved into the food industry, working in scientific and regulatory affairs for a big, American-based global multinational. And learned a lot through that experience. And that set me on a path that effectively got me to where I am today, always with that notion of whatever my next opportunity was going to be, it was still going to be focused on child health and well-being. So no, I didn't pursue a nutrition career, but I pursued a career focused on this unwavering commitment to want to make a difference for kids to the degree that I could with the skills and abilities that I had. And that's always been my guiding light.
Wow. What a, very impressive, Marco. And I think, if I heard what you just explained to me, one would ask, well, so why and how does that relate to the work at Jumpstart to get kids involved? I understand it. I mean, I absolutely get it. But I think, I'd love you to connect the dots to what the degrees you have to what Jumpstart's doing today across our country to get kids active.
Yeah, and this is the topic I love discussing the most, Sheldon, as you know. I can mm-hmm. do it for hours, quite honestly. And one of the skills I picked up as a graduate student, as a doctoral student, is to learn how to really make evidence-based or evidence-informed decisions and look to data to inform how we can do things better. And that's a skill that I've taken, to this day. And when you look at the role that sport, physical activity, and recreation play, we all have a natural affinity to want to play. And I use that term broadly. It doesn't have to be structured sport. It can be, romping around on a playground. It can be tossing a ball with friends. It could be dancing with someone in your living room. Movement and play is something we're all kind of inherently wired to want to do. But there's a reason for that, is that we now know, when you look at at the evidence or the data or the science, call it what you will, there's benefits to doing that beyond just the physical health and well-being. We know that the more you move, the healthier your body is. That's a given. I think people largely accept that. It's why you see people take on gym memberships and go out running when it's nice and stuff like that. But we know now that it's not just about physical health. There's a lot of evidence showing that the participation in sport, play, recreation is a major way to improve our mental health and resiliency. It's a major way to improve a student's participation and performance in a school setting. We look at, there's strong correlations between the amount of activity a child gets and how well they are able to pay attention in class, and in many cases, how well they're able to do in school. And on top of that, we know that there are so many life skills that can be extracted from participation in sport, physical activity, and recreation. We think about pro-social behaviors because we have to play with teammates and we have to play by certain rules on a field of play. We think about, our self-regulation. You can't just go off on a you shouldn't, especially if you've taken respect training, you shouldn't just go off on a referee or a coach if you're told to do something differently or that you did something wrong. So there's all kinds of major benefits that help us become our better selves when we take on a life of movement, play, sport, recreation. And particularly as children, where we're still developing, those life skills, those benefits have a long-lasting impression, and they give us the ability to set ourselves on the right path as we become adults. So to me, that's the link, is that it's not just a nice to have. Quite frankly, sport, physical activity, movement is a must have because it has major impact on our overall health and well-being as we go from childhood to our teenage years and into adulthood.
How do we, I couldn't agree more, Marco. I mean, we've had these conversations for a long time, and I think one of the gaps, one of the challenges, is being able to have, legislation or policy, whatever you want to call it, understand and recognize what you just said. Understand the importance of health and well-being of sport. It's not just sport, right? There's sport and healthy competition is great. It's awesome. But we need to understand this more.
This is the interesting thing about this, Sheldon. I mean, you and I are both, big believers in this. And we know there are lots of people in the recreation, sport, physical activity sectors that believe in this too. What's interesting is so does our government. Little unbeknownst to a lot of people in the sport policy, the current version, which dates back to 2012, unfortunately, it needs to be renewed. But there's this concept of what they call sport for development, which recognizes that beyond just participation and beyond just representation on our high performance teams at a national level or an international competition, sport has inherent social benefits to participants of all ages. So the fact that the government recognizes this and it's embedded in policy is a good first step. The challenge is that we haven't gone beyond that to actually create tangible ways to make sure that we are giving all participants, regardless of background, regardless of where they live, regardless of the barriers to exist, that exist for them to be able to participate, we have not given them the opportunity to actually experience those benefits in a meaningful way. So this is where the policy now needs to come through and actually create tangible mechanisms for everybody to have access and tap into those benefits. But we're still falling woefully short of that.
Yeah, I mean, policies are great. They help guide. But what I know about, this type of, change, if you like, is this is about, these are taught skills. So, I think, what we're talking about is we need to educate, we need to teach differently so that, our boots on the ground and those, wonderful volunteers that we have across our country learn a different way and understand, the broader, the bigger picture, if you may. And that's exciting. I think that's a challenge in front of us. And I think that with this podcast, with the pandemic, it gives us an opportunity to make that change, because I think that it's allowed all of us to really do some soul searching and some looking into how can we get better, not only in our own homes, but outside of that. And I think sport and the sport leaders that we've seen across the country with our work at Respect Group have seen that willingness and that need to be different.
Oh, you're so right, Sheldon. What was really amazing to see, especially in the early stages of the pandemic. So like go back to exactly a year ago when everything really started to go to hell in a handbasket, and, you know, sport clubs were, seasons were cut short and kids were sidelined and all that. What was really, really interesting to see was how quickly a lot of sport or grassroots sports organizations pivoted from offering their in-person programming to rallying their participants online. Keep in mind, you know, we take it for granted now that everybody's on Zoom or everybody's on Teams. Back at the beginning of the pandemic, it wasn't intuitive for everybody to figure all this technology out, and it wasn't affordable for a lot of organizations, but they quickly figured out a way, you know, coaches and club managers quickly figured out a way to stay engaged with their kids. And what were they engaging on? They weren't able to offer activity online because, you know, they could barely figure out the technology. What they were doing was just creating that social interaction. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself was amazing, because it gave these kids an outlet. Kids who weren't able to participate, whether it was at school or on the field of play, it gave them an outlet to bond with other people outside of the confines of their own home. And for many of us, we take for granted, those of us who live in households where everything is stable, that wasn't the case for a lot of people across mm-hmm. Canada. There are many households where kids were, you know, silently suffering abuse, silently suffering isolation. There was a lot of stress going on. So those social engagements with their teammates, so to speak, was a major avenue for them to be able to start to heal from some of the trauma that was being introduced at the onset of COVID-19 last March.
Yeah. Well, I was on a call on one of the boards I sit on, and it's with our board chairs, the chief of police in Edmonton. But, you know, they were talking about the numbers of domestic violence across this country. And we know that when you talk about domestic violence, that's within the home. But there's so much more that comes with that, and who are impacted, our kids. So a lot of times our kids are looking at whatever activity they're participating in as their safe place. And, you know, so if we look at that stress combined with just the added stress of the pandemic, which I feel that personally, we know that our kids are going to need support. And this is not about kicking the ball. And I know you and I and Dina Bella-Roche participated in the soccer panel about these exact issues. And you were talking at that time, Marco, about some of these data that you had gotten through some surveys that you did with Jumpstart. And I'd love you to be able to talk about that, about, you know, how kids are feeling and families are feeling through the pandemic and the return to play.
Yeah, you're again so right. The conversation we had with Dina, with a group of soccer coaches and managers here in Ontario, was just one example of the types of conversations that are shifting away from, you know, focusing on the technical and tactical skill development, at least once kids start to come back to our clubs, to focus on, you know, the social and emotional supports that they're going to need. Because again, they've gone through a lot of trauma there, and there's two layers to this. So, you know, the survey you spoke about, we've been really focused at Jumpstart and help trying to help the grassroots sport organizations across the country that have, you know, for many reasons, not had the types of government supports that that small businesses and businesses of all sizes have had. And it's pretty bad. I mean, we're seeing at this point that there are a lot of organizations that are on the verge of bankruptcy. There are a lot of organizations that are, you know, shut down indefinitely. But despite all the financial challenges that these organizations are facing, their leaders, their volunteers are more worried about the participants themselves, because what we're seeing is that, you know, and to take a step back, we surveyed about 1,000 households with kids under the age of 18. And what we found was just heartbreaking in terms of the impact. You know, many parents are saying that, you know, their kids are feeling alone and isolated. Like over 70% of kids that were of parents that were surveyed, and these feelings are even worse for the kids who normally would have an outlet through sport, physical activity, recreation. That over 64% of the parents that we surveyed said that their kids are finding it really difficult to reduce stress and anxiety. There's obviously, you know, a lot fewer kids, and many organizations, including Jumpstart Participation, others have shown that kids' physical activity, physical fitness has declined drastically. And these feelings of stress, isolation, loneliness, these are signs of real trauma that are starting to impact kids. And it's, you know, certainly not just due to the lack of sport participation, but the lack of sport participation is exacerbating those feelings, that trauma. You know, you have to recognize the kids have borne the brunt of this on many levels. They've missed milestones like birthdays. They've missed big transitions. My daughter's a great example. She went into this pandemic at the age of 16, like many of her peers. She will come out of it, you know, touch wood that we all get vaccinated. She'll come out of it at the age of 18. Those are two really important, you know, birthday milestones. Kids have missed school. They've missed memorable moments at school, like graduations and you know, annual yearbook photos and all these things. And yes, we are fortunate that these are some of the things that, you know, kids are missing as opposed to food, shelter, but they're important things that are making the trauma of this COVID-19 experience worse for them. And any means we have to help them navigate through that is going to be important. So that's why, you know, to your point, coaches are going to find themselves in the role of social worker when kids come back mm-hmm. to the field of play, because kids are going to have all kinds of baggage that they're bringing back when they hit the soccer pitch or they hit the hockey rink. And keep in mind, for many kids, particularly, you know, racialized youth, Black youth, Indigenous youth, who systematically deal with racism on many fronts, all the events of last summer are a whole other level of trauma that they had to go through. Like those were events that just opened many, many wounds for people, despite the fact that we're having this great open dialogue around racism now. Those are triggering experiences for a lot of youth that very regularly face discrimination and racism in the places they play, in the places they go to school, and the places they socialize. So there's a lot of trauma that you know, coaches, youth activity leaders are in a real perfect position to help these kids work through.
Well, well said, Mark. I think, you know, and with that, I mean, you know, one thing that I've learned is that, you know, in most of the times, you know, it's not about fixing the situation. It's about supporting and guiding and listening. And I think that's really important. I know that was a shift for me when I first told my story back in 1998. I felt every story, every disclosure that I ever heard or, you know, a cry for help from somebody, I felt I needed to take that on and I needed to fix the situation. And what I've learned over the years is that, you know, I can't fix people, but what I can really do well is make sure I listen and guide them and be the bridge to the professional help, if that's what it takes, or the help or the, you know, whatever the situation may present itself as, get them the support that they need. And I think, Marco, one other thing I would just want to touch on before we end the show, and this has been awesome, is the inclusion and diversity side of your work and your passion. I mean, I know you sit on the committee, the Paralympic Committee's diversity and inclusion group, and just touch a little bit on that and the work that Jumpstart's trying to do across this country in that space as well. I know that, you know, and just the inclusive playgrounds, you know, I was a part of that opening, and I've seen that, and Respect Group was so proud to be a partner in the playground in Calgary. But I look at the, you know, what that offers a community, it's unreal.
Thanks, Sheldon. You know, I know I love the pictures of you and Wayne and Scott, our president, you know, goofing around on that playground in Calgary when it was open. You know, it just goes to show you, it brings out the kid in all of us, right? You know, the journey of Jumpstart, and it kind of comes full circle to the question you asked me about my academic background, because, you know, again, you gotta kind of understand what the data is telling you about this. And we know there's a problem. We know there are systemic barriers to participation. And you know, not that it's all about numbers and taking an academic mindset to this problem, because it's more than that. But, you know, we live in a very diverse country, but we often mistake the fact that diversity is synonymous with inclusion, and it's not. Inclusion is about intentionality. It's about, you know, and I've been fortunate. I've had lots of peers, lots of colleagues who have helped me better understand and learn about the role that I can play to really make sure that as a steward of this amazing thing we have at Jumpstart, that we are systematically breaking down the barriers that we know exist today. And we started our journey, you know, as you pointed out, with accessibility and inclusion in 2017, when we were asked by, you know, the then president and CEO of Canadian Tire Corporation, Stephen Wetmore, to develop a program that was going to help kids with disabilities of all types embrace the opportunity to participate in sport, physical activity, and recreation. And so the first thing we did wasn't go off and work in isolation to come up with some plan. That would have been absolutely silly of us to you know, do it on our own. We engaged in so many conversations with organizations that had already been doing this amazing work for so many years: the Canadian Paralympic Committee, the Rick Hansen Foundation. There's a group out in Vancouver called the Canucks Autism Network, amazing group that works with kids on the autism spectrum in the context of sport and recreation, among other things. We engage with you know, scientists and educators who work in this space, and we spend a lot of time learning, throwing ideas back and forth, and ultimately designing with them a program that touched on the barriers we know most kids and most persons with disabilities face with respect to physical activity. And it boils down to three major areas. One was programming resources, high quality programming. So with staff and personnel that were qualified to really create those inclusive environments, dealing with the infrastructure barriers, which is where the playgrounds and some of our other investments come in. And then building capacity with coaches and youth activity leaders to help them better understand how they can create those welcoming environments for all kids of all abilities. So we undertook that approach. You know, we're 4 years into that program now, and we're really making a difference because we're measuring the impact. But it's that same mentality, that same co-design, consultation, working with others, listening, learning, and letting others take the lead where they have established their presence in this space. It's the same approach we're taking on diversity inclusion writ large. We naturally work with a lot of Indigenous-led and Black-led organizations. We've done a lot of work on gender equity with Canadian women in sport, but we know there's more we can do. And quite honestly, it's not just external facing. There's a lot of internal things that we need to do as an organization as well. But it's that process of engaging, making sure that we're listening, and making sure we're having difficult conversations that force us to really think hard about the role that we can play. So we're certainly on that journey, and we've got a long way to go. But I think at the end of the day, our guide will be, the question: have we addressed all the barriers we possibly can that are preventing any participant from embracing the benefits of sport, physical activity, and recreation?
Marco, we're running out of time, so I'm gonna first of all just say that, you know, not only me personally, but I know Wayne, my partner, and all of us at Respect Group, we value our partnership with Jumpstart. We value our conversations that we have, and I know collectively, and what I know about this type of work, and you know, about the conversations that we've had today, is that, you know, and you know, sometimes there's a fear to be perfect, have this, get it just perfect. And I think, you know, that's not what these issues and change is about. I think change is about continued progress. And as long as we're committing to making progress and taking baby steps to continually make things better as we know more and get better and get better and get better, I think, you know, we'll look back in a few years and say, geez, we really made a shift. And I think that's an important piece for our listeners today, because a lot of listeners are going to go out to our clients and Jumpstart's clients and partners and friends and people that are in the trenches that, you know, are the ones that drive the change. And on that, Marco, I just, you know, really want to thank you personally on a personal level for all you've given and the time. And I know what it takes to, you know, do this work. Yes, there's a job aspect, but then there's the other piece of it that is, you know, that is basically in your head for 24/7 trying to understand it. And it's that passion. And I see that you have it and your team at Jumpstart has it, Scott. And I want to thank you all for that, because we know how important this type of work is. And, you know, is there anything that any last, thoughts that you might have on our conversation or message that you want to leave to our listeners today, Marco?
Well, Sheldon, you've touched on it all. And I'm very fortunate. First of all, you are an inspiration. I without say, there's so much that I've learned from just being your friend, your colleague, your partner on this journey to make sport a better place. But you're right. I think I have one of the best jobs in the country when it comes to the sport, physical activity, recreation landscape, and I am so fortunate. But I do get up every day thinking about, you know, what can we do better? What can we do differently? And I love it. And it's because I get to work with people like you, but more importantly, I get to see smiles on kids' faces when we do get it right. And there's no better reward than that. So
that's right.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, I remember Caitlin and I, when we went to our Jumpstart school, we had a blast. I'll tell you, it was so fun. It was awesome. And, you know, and I know that Jumpstart's given, I mean, you know, you gave an additional $12 million to the Sport Relief Fund. What would that be in total through the pandemic that Jumpstart's given to the country to help out our sport and activities?
Yeah, so in sport relief alone, it's going to, you know, last year and this year, it'll be about 20 million. But wow, this year alone, with the sport relief and all of our other programming, we'll be investing close to $30 million in the Canadian sport, physical activity and recreation landscape, either directly to kids and their families or to sport orgs or to infrastructure. We're really excited about, you know, the difference that we can make this year. We're in a fortunate position because we've got the backing of Canadian Tire Corporation, and they have been super supportive and generous throughout all of this. But that means that we in turn can do the same for all the kids and all the organizations out there at the grassroots level that really need the help now more than ever.
Well, thank you to the Canadian Tire Corporation and Jumpstart, to you, Scott, and all your team. And for you doing the podcast, Respect Group will make a $100 donation to Jumpstart. So hopefully that gets, you know, a young person into a sport or can help in some way. We will make that donation just to say a little thank you from us to you, Marco, and just to wrap up, you know, be sure to subscribe to our show in your podcast app so we can stay connected. This show was made possible by Respect Group. And to learn more about their work and vision, visit respectgroupinc.com. And thanks again for tuning in. And Marco, thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. And I'm going to have you back on the show again if I can get to episode 2.
Thank you, Sheldon.
Have a great day, my friend.
You too.
Okay.